veteran
and his emotional support Canadian
scream into the void about the Mormon Church. If you want to reach us, we are on Instagram at NotSoPeterPriesthood.
And you can email us at NotSoPeterPriesthood@gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. Enjoy!
Bye!
Digress? We never digress. What are you talking about? By the time listeners hear this, I will not be a 40-year-old anymore. Be 41s. It hurts. Okay. 41's a weird number.
How's your hip doing?
I know. Time for a hip replacement already. I put in for it. Goodness. Let's see.
Frozen. A relative of Pat's at the reunion yesterday was like, they're getting a hip replacement and they're not that old. And Pat was like, what's wrong with you? And they're like, oh, I'm waiting on a hip replacement. And he was like, really? And they're like, yeah, it's called hard work, Pat. And he was like, from you? That was the same relative I called out for quoting Yoda, trying to have like a spiritual moment.
Oh, yeah. Tell listeners about that one. That was a good one.
Okay. So that's relative of Pat's yesterday. So Pat's grandma is LDS. She joined the church like after she'd had her kids or whatever in her older life. One of her husbands. I don't know. Anyways. But one of her sons, so one of Pat's uncles, married a woman who's like very Christian. And like, it's a whole, sometimes we just sit and giggle about how like extreme everything is with them. But anyways, but he was like trying to have a conversation with Pat's grandma about like religion and like being in church and like following. He was like, God is always there. You just have to listen. He's always in your path. He always puts himself in your path. You just have to be willing. And he was like, Mom, I'm going to show you. And he took a dime and he put his dime in his hand and he said, Mom, try and take the dime from my hand. And so she just like was looking at him. Like, Pat's grandma is very sassy. I adore the woman. Like, she is sassy. And she just like picked up the dime, looking at him like, what the fuck is this? And he was like, no, Mom. He like took it from her and he put his hand. He's like, Mom, try to take the dime from my hand. And she's just staring at him and she just like picked up the dime. No, you're not understanding. You did pick up the dime. You didn't try to pick up the dime. You can't just, if you do it or you don't do it, you're not you can't try to do anything. And I was sat there and I was like, Yoda said that. And he just like turned at me. And I was like, that's from Star Wars. Do or do not. There is no try. That Yoda said that. And Pat's grandma just had this like huge grin on her face. And his uncle was like death glaring at me. Like, I'm trying to have a moment with my mother. And I was like looking around. And Pat that just like took me by the arm. Was like, hey, come tell me about your kids. And like led me away. I was like, is that what we're doing? For quoting Star Wars? Because I'm here to quote Star Wars. I just want to be transparent. That is from Yoda. I told Pat about it. He wasn't there, but I told him about it. And he was, like, dying laughing. And then I had to tell my sister-in-law. And she's like, I love you. I know. I'm the best.
Well, and it made me think of... It's so amazing. But on my mission, that was, like, a quote that we always said because
you said Katie and I thought Marco about it.
Yeah, do or do not, there's no try. So every time I hear that, I'm like, yeah, it's Star Wars, but it's also mission.
Yeah. Oh my god, it was so, just the look he gave me was like, shut up, child.
This is an object lesson and you fucked it up.
Yeah. I'm trying to have a deep conversation. And just like Pat's grandma was just like
I love it. All right. So today we are going to get a little true crimey. So, all right. This paragraph is just hilarious to me. Just to give you a look into what we're going to talk about. Many people in eastern Idaho have never heard of the Kaneko case. A smart man with a brilliant wife and daughter who seemed to be living a normal life until they weren't. I'm like, he did that.
What's his name from, like, Oh God, what's it called? Dateline? What's his name? Keith Morrison?
Yeah. I think,
Until they weren't.
Yeah. He literally stole from that. Anyway.
It was a pleasant sunny day in a small town until it wasn't.
Yeah. let's see. So I'm not entirely sure. There's not a lot out there about this, but it's just so wild. All right. So buckle up. In Rexburg, Idaho, which is where I reside at this point.
The place where I currently am.
Yeah. David and Lorraine Kaneko and their daughter Laura were known in their Madison County community as a family that was intelligent and deeply committed to their Mormon faith. David had a secure job at the Naval Reactors Facility outside Idaho Falls, which is now called the Idaho National Laboratory. It's gone through so many different names. When I was in high school, it was the INEEL, which always was such a, oh, I was like.
INEEL?
Yeah, basically. I was like, why don't we just say INEEL? But then they shortened it to INL. But anyway.
That's hilarious.
They do a lot of, obviously, like nuclear stuff out there and cybersecurity stuff. And like, it's like kind of the, and it's huge. It's a booming place, and it's like one of the hot places to work right now around in that area.
Oh yeah, you've told me about it, right?
Yeah, I was gonna work out there, but anyway, but they're like getting people from all over the country working there now, so it's kind of a big deal. But anyway, this was back in early 2000s, late 90s, but all right, so Laura dreamed of being a doctor and one day curing cancer. Family members told accident, suicide, or murder, streaming now on oxygen.com. In 1994, the Kanekos began to distance themselves from the community and the LDS church. At the same time, David became controlling. He wouldn't allow Laura, valedictorian of her high school class, to deliver a speech at graduation. He squashed ideas she'd had about going to Japan as part of their church missionary program. The family, quote, just kind of went into seclusion, Lorraine's brothers told producers. 3 years after this reclusive pattern began, Lorraine's siblings grew increasingly concerned about the two women. By 1997, Lorraine's brothers requested a welfare check by the Madison County Police. Investigators told Accident, Suicide, or Murder that the women came to the door and told them they understood the concern, but that their lifestyle was there by choice. Officials entered the home and confirmed that there was food, running water, and electricity available. The next welfare check came in 2001. Once again, the mom and daughter told authorities they were all right and could care for themselves. On June 19, 2004, while David was at work, officers arrived at the Kaneko home with a warrant to enter the home. By this time, Lorraine, 58, and Laura, 33, had been unseen for nearly a decade. Lorraine's brothers hoped that the two would agree to speak with a psychologist who could evaluate their mental states. It's
wow.
Getting, yeah. Investigators who entered the home were struck by chaotic clutter they found inside. Black plastic covered the windows. There was a strong chemical smell in the house that wasn't masked by hundreds of air fresheners.
Hundreds of air fresheners. Oh no.
I know.
Oh no.
I know.
Oh no.
Investigators then opened the door and were hit by an overwhelming odor.
Oh no.
Beneath the blankets of a bed, Lorraine and Laura's extremely decomposed bodies were found lying together side by side, said Captain Travis Williams, former detective for the Madison County Sheriff Department.
What?
I know. Yeah. So they were seen in 2001, and then they were seen, they hadn't been seen. This was 3 years after they had been
after
seen.
After that, 2004.
Yep.
So, how long have they been? Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. One body was almost to the skeleton stage. The other body appeared to have been there a shorter amount of time.
Oh my God.
Oh, it looked like a mummy. That really shocked me, said Lieutenant David Stoddard, a former detective with the Madison County Sheriff's Department. I remember thinking they had to have died right after that last welfare 3 years ago. Wild, right? Okay.
I have no words.
Listeners, Dusty sat up straight in her, like, she was like, oh, what?
My posture got real good all of a sudden.
Yeah. Detectives had to consider that the two women were victims of murder, and David, they said, was the prime suspect.
Yeah, you think?
When David arrived at his home, he told investigators that he needed his attorney present before he could talk with them.
Yeah, I mean, good call. You should always have a lawyer, even if you're innocent, which I don't think he is.
The victims' bodies were brought to the medical examiner for autopsies. Every item and every scrap of paper was removed for analysis. Detectives tried to ascertain David's role in the gruesome deaths. He didn't have any concern as to what happened to Laura or Lorraine, said Williams. Instead, he was concerned about what the authorities were doing with his property.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
So he wasn't charged with a crime, but was placed on a $500,000 material witness bond to keep him in jail. Yeah, daily food logs and diaries kept by Lorraine and Laura were scrutinized in hopes that they'd hold clues about their deaths. The journal entries by the mom and daughter documented 10 years of progressively deeper seclusion. In Lorraine's journals, she referred to her husband moving through the house like a vapor, according to investigators, and she called him a murderer. Investigators determined that Laura died first, so the daughter died first in May or June of 2001. Her cause of death was dehydration and possibly starvation, according to Dr. William Rodriguez, chief forensic pathologist, U.S. Department of Defense medical examiner.
Oh.
This is so crazy. I just, yeah. So he was living in that house with two bodies.
Two bodies.
Not
That's
just
like,
bodies, but like the bodies of his wife and daughter.
Who like, he didn't seem to really care.
Care, yeah.
About just don't touch my books and my 100 air fresheners.
Oh God. Anyway, Lorraine, who had died a year or so before her body was found, starved to death. So the mother starved to death. There were no signs of beating, stabbing, shooting, or poisoning. David had lived with his daughter's decaying body for 3 years and with his wife's corpse for a year. Ugh. I just can't imagine why you would want to live in the same house with your daughter's decomposing body. Lisa Daly Smith, a journalist with the Rexburg Standard Journal, told producers. That's just straight out of some horror movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think? Painstaking analysis of the women's journals shed light on why and how the women died. Both women were mentally ill. Diaries revealed that Laura had a mental illness that started manifesting itself in her early teens.
Oh, no.
I know. Laura believed she had received a revelation in 1994 that she was supposed to muscle. She and her mother stopped eating as part of a cleansing process to fulfill that vision.
Oh, no.
All tied to their religious belief too.
Mental illness generally focuses on like some sort of religious insanity. It really does. Yeah,
and that in itself is like, so the church's whole thing with like personal revelation, that always seems to like, it's circular logic. Like you can have personal revelation, but if it goes against the church, then it's not really personal revelation. You're hearing it from Satan. But if you're there's just like this weird. But then it also radicalizes people into this. Like, there's mental illness that goes into it. It radicalizes, like, the Lafferty brothers that were, you know, that received a personal revelation, quote, that they were, like, supposed to, save the, what was it? What was their whole thing? They wanted to.
They're the new Messiah or whatever.
Messiah, yeah. It's chosen. Always some sort of, like, we're the chosen people. And but I can't imagine they were stopped eating. So they starved themselves to death to cleanse, to fulfill a vision to marry an apostle.
Like if I don't get lunch, I am cranky. Like, I cannot imagine. Like.
Well, and then the dad, like, enabling this and, like, letting them, like, I'm really.
Like, I feel like a typical father would look at their child and be like, sweetheart, we need to like get some help for this. This is not. Yeah. Like what man just is like, yeah, okay, starve yourself to death. That's perfectly logical. And then I'll live with your dead body for 3 years.
Yeah. Detectives still needed clarity about David's state of mind along with his role in the women's deaths. He'd continued to work and seek medical attention for his ailments, but never sought interventions for his wife and daughter. As prosecutors, yeah, so he's going to the hospital and doctors and whatever for himself, but not for, not even remotely even reporting this to anybody. As prosecutors weighed possible charges against David, they requested that he undergo a psychological evaluation. Officials then invoked a special magistrate to force the psychologist to share what David had revealed. Investigators learned that David explained that he discovered that Lorraine had died and that his wife was determined to fulfill the prophecy. When Lorraine eventually died, he placed her in bed next to Laura.
How is she supposed to fulfill the prophecy of a daughter marrying an apostle when she's already dead?
I don't know. I think that's another indication of how mentally ill
I think the they whole were. Family was. And do you think it was like a biological thing, or do you think it became such a, like, they made themselves ill with this?
Probably.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's see. Authorities considered an array of charges, including murder, but determined that his actions and inactions didn't rise to the level of homicide. However, he knew they were sick and didn't give them help or report their deaths.
At the very least, it's negligence, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so yeah, I guess his daughter was an adult when she died, but still, like...
But still, she's, like... living in their house, like, yeah. You still have to, like, you're still responsible for people that live in your house.
And isn't there laws about having to report a death? Like,
I think, I'm pretty sure, like, I don't think it's he was charged with 2 counts of involuntary manslaughter, 2 counts of abandoning a vulnerable adult, and desertion and non-support of a spouse.
Yeah.
He was sentenced to 4 to 6 years in prison with a 6-month mental health rider program. After completing the 6-month program, he was released on a 5-year probation. David then spent the following 11 years living in the same home where Lorraine and Laura had died. God.
What?
Mm-hmm. In 2014, so just 10 years ago, he made a court request for his manslaughter convictions to be cleared from the record. And on June 3rd, 2016, at the age of 76, he died of cancer.
Wow.
Yeah. So the only reason I even found this, like, I was living, like, I was in high school when this was, like, and I was probably, in 2004, I was, like, coming back from my mission, so.
Yeah.
Like, I was around here when this was happening, but I never heard of it at all, ever.
Wild.
Let's see, I gotta find, so there's a new, there's going to be a new documentary about it. Well, not documentary. It's like they're going to be on an episode of something. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I got an ad here. Shush. So this is like the latest article. They're going to be on Tell Me How I Died on A&E.
Oh, okay.
But so by the time listeners hear this, it's already available. I want to watch it. I was going to watch it before I did this episode, but I don't know what they're going to say that... Shut up.
Yeah, I wonder if there's any more, like, information available to them because they're, like, you know, filmmakers or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Well, interesting.
He basically just reiterates what I just told you. That was from... This, what I just read, was from an older article, like, when it was, like...
Like, actually happening or whatever.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Nate Eaton is the one that covered the story, and he's, let's see, he's actually also, he covered Laura Daybell. Is her name Laura?
Lori Daybell.
Lori. Oh my God, I am not.
it's the weekend, man. I hear you.
Yeah.
Brain's not burning.
There is a Laura. This Laura. Then Lori, yeah, Daybell. Then Lori. Anyway.
Okay, so he, like, is in the area and, like, knows.
Yeah, like, he's very, he's the... one of our, like, he sat through the whole entire, like, he would give, like, sometimes minute-by-minute updates of the court stuff.
Oh, I think I was following him, yeah, when he was, yeah, I think you told me to follow him, actually.
Yeah, he's really good. Wild. He's been around forever in this area, and he, And he's now nationally known because of the Lori Daybell thing. But let's see. There's not
wild.
There really isn't a whole lot of information about it other than that. I just thought it was wild that, like, this case never even, like, really got seen.
Yeah, that's strange.
See something.
Unless here. Maybe the family wanted to keep it really quiet. I don't know. Because, like,
it is, that's like,
so crazy.
In this video, they're, like, interviewing, like, high school friends of the daughter, Laura. And they're saying that she just, like, smiled all the time. She was just a happy young woman, like, just, and then.
And she was intelligent, if she was valedictorian,
yeah.
Like.
Yeah. I just, it's crazy to me. I don't understand what.
It just shows you mental health does not judge based on socioeconomics or intelligence levels or where you live or religion. Like, it will come for you regardless of any of those things, you know?
Yeah. Let's see. So, that's from East Idaho News. Sorry, I'm trying to find, like, a. No, yeah. Everything it says is that it's just going to be on this, on A&E. So, really, there's not.
Not a lot of information here. Crazy.
I didn't think it would. Anyway. Let's see. So, this is from Fox News garbage, but really it's from AP News, but Fox News covered it. Let's see. So, David Kaneko pleaded guilty to two counts of involuntary manslaughter in 2007 and was sentenced to 4 to 10 years in prison. Kaneko will probably be dead by then, said Doug Sakota, the brother of Kaneko's deceased wife. He told the newspaper that Kaneko is dying of cancer. In the recent motion requesting withheld judgment, Kaneko said he's in poor health and wanted to clear his name. The 5th District Judge Gregory Mueller ruled that under Idaho code, the court didn't have authority at this time to grant Kaneko a withheld judgment because of the 5-year time requirement. In 2004, relatives told authorities they were worried about Kaneko's wife and daughter because they hadn't been seen for years. I can't imagine, like, you haven't seen these people for years, and you're just, like, how do you... And I get it, like, I have cousins that I live, like, that live in this area that I don't see that often, but I think... Mm-hmm. I know that they exist, you know, I know that
they
have a social media, you know, like, I know that they're...
Yeah, like, yeah. Well, I guess this is 2000... early aughts, so there wasn't things like, true. I mean, Facebook existed, but that was about it, right? Like
MySpace.
MySpace, stop it! rate our friends.
Hmm?
We just used to rate our friends. Like, that was just a thing we did.
And you get taken off the top 8 when you do something.
Yeah. I don't think I was ever in anybody's top 8, now that I think about it. I mean, that tracks, though.
This also reminded me of that, what was the mom, the mother, holy, what was she called, the mother god, what is that? They basically lived with her corpse for
a few months or whatever.
A few months, and, like, they carried her corpse from, like, across the...
Yeah, you can't take a dead body across state lines, like, that's
so dumb. And they're, you know, tied to religion, too, mm-hmm. And I'm just, like...
And they're still going.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they've broken off into splinter groups, but, like, they're still out there with their, you know, internet, they're... only eating their 800 calories a day or whatever they're allowed to.
Yeah, and what was the stuff they were taking? The silver stuff that they were taking? Yeah.
Yeah, colloidal silver.
Colloidal silver, yeah, that they were... And she basically overdosed on colloidal silver. God. This is all just more further proof that religion just kind of literally can suck the life out of you.
Yeah. like I always want to, there's so many that have covered it, but like the whole like Ruby Frankie thing, how religion can twist things so dark.
Mm-hmm. And you get that way real fast.
Yeah, and the fact that now she's like, oh, I'm better now. I just had to get away from Jody, and I'm like, but you were a bad mom before you were involved with Jody. Like, it's so I can't stop looking into it because it's so ugly and dark, and it all stems from her teaching her children from like an LDS standpoint, you know. It's just very strange to me.
It's weird to hear this stuff too. Like, it's in Rexburg, Idaho. Like, Rexburg is supposed to be like this, you know, the
little humdrum,
nothing ever happens here,
Mormon town. Yeah, like you drive by it when you're going down south, and you're like, oh, there's Rexburg. Okay, bye. Like,
yeah, nobody ever stops here unless you're Mormon. But
no, and I was Mormon. I don't think I ever stopped in Rexburg. I stopped in Idaho Falls.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. Idaho Falls is a bigger city, but...
something, I don't even know.
But the... and Rexburg is growing, and I think it's been... Now we're known for the Daybell stuff, and that's just...
God, yeah! And, like, those kids that were murdered in the campus house or whatever, or off-campus house?
Oh, that's in University of Idaho.
Oh. Right?
That was there. That's what they're known for now. Moscow, yeah. Idaho.
Oh, Moscow. That's what I was like. It's a weird name. What is it?
Yeah.
Moscow. Yeah. Like, Idaho. Yeah. You good, girl?
No.
What is happening in Idaho?
It's so weird because there's for the longest time, I was like, especially like I'd go out to, you know, you meet people when I was in the Navy, especially. So I'd be out there, you know, with people that they're like Idaho, they would get it mixed with Iowa, you know, like it's just one of those states that you don't think of, you know, and I would never, you know, I don't think my ties to it are just because of my family.
Yeah.
But I don't, like, if I had my druthers, I wouldn't be living here. I won't be here much longer, but, you know, whatever.
You say that, but...
I say that, but it'll probably be a couple more years, but...
You have a really good job, so, you know.
Exactly.
Hard to walk away from that.
I know. Anyway, that's the story of... I mean, it's really short, but I thought it was worth talking about simply because of, like, how... Like, we've talked about the... How it intertwines with... There's a correlation... to religion, to like mental
illness,
and
it's so interesting how it's always like, you know, I've had a vision, or Jesus speaks to me, or I'm a prophet, or I, you know, it's so strange how it,
like, Lori Daybell used to see, what was his name,
she talked to Moroni,
didn't
she talk to Moroni in the temple? I'm like, girl, that's not normal, like,
go see a therapist.
Like, if I was starting to see dead people talking to me, I'd be like, I need an appointment right now. I will bring my hallucination with me.
I don't know if that was, you know, she's not in the mental state to even question that. That's what's sad about the Lorraine and Laura, is they probably just didn't even have the capacity to even question.
Yeah, and that's, the isolation makes it so much more nefarious, because there's no support system being like, honey,
I think you need
you're
to...
not doing okay. Yeah. You know, like, there's nobody checking in on you to be like, oh, okay, I know that the traffic circles drive you crazy, but like, are you okay? Are you good?
Okay, I need to, you know, traffic circles. Listeners, we were talking about traffic circles. I get so irritated with the roundabouts here because people are idiots. And I'm literally laying in bed talking to Dusty about them and getting road rage just thinking about it. Because
like, I have road rage in bed.
So I'm not okay when it comes to roundabouts, because...
Does a roundabout speak to you? Like... when you start going through the traffic circle and start having like revelations, then I'm gonna be really worried about you.
It's probably a good thing that I marco you while I do that, so then
probably,
you'll be like,
so that you can be like,
you should probably go check into a hospital.
You're like, hey, Nephi was in the middle of that traffic circle. Just detour to the hospital.
Maybe that's why the centers are just completely obliterated in the middle of them. People see things.
Have to run them down.
Yeah.
Wow. That's hilarious.
Speaking of isolation, I mean, Idaho is kind of like, it's just isolated up here. You're just far away from everything. It's just, it makes sense that people just go crazy here.
Seriously.
And you got the Mormons that are...
The Mormons.
Everywhere.
The Mormons.
I will have to say that it's like a whole different experience being here, obviously, as an ex-Mormon, because it's just... It's not, I feel so much freer. But like... Because I can remember, like, when I first moved back here, I was like, oh, I'm going to have to deal with Mormons. But really, I don't deal with them as much as I only have to deal with them so much as I, like, let myself, you know?
Yeah,
like,
because you're not in that circle anymore, right? Like, you exist outside the bubble, so.
And I feel like my mental health is just way much, way better than I'm outside of the church.
Yeah.
Outside looking in. And I can just, like, I can look at them and be like, oh, you guys are weird. Okay, move on.
You guys are weird. I know. I couldn't imagine moving back to, like, Hardston. I mean, I never actually lived in Hardston, but I went to high school there. But, like, just because it's a dry town. So, like, the whole town is so centered around being a Mormon town. Like, I would go insane. For sure.
Yeah. I don't really... I just live in Rexburg. I just, like, sleep and eat here. But I don't, like, actually... When people go tell me, like, oh, have you seen what's going on downtown in Rexburg? I'm like, no. Let's. I don't go to Rexburg.
Yeah, like, right.
Speaking of, there's this FizzRiz coming to. It's a mocktail bar coming to Rexburg.
Oh my god! Seriously. Like,
basically, this episode is basically just a. Whatever.
Bash on Rexburg.
Yeah, basically. I thought it was going to be true crimey, and it is. We just talked about something very dark, but like...
FizzRiz, wow. Wow.
Let's see. So it's a mocktail bar and arcade. Ooh, there's a... All right, so... Accept all cookies. Yes, I'll accept them all. I don't... Why do they keep asking me about that? Anyway, that's probably why I have malware on my. Anyway, looking for a night out in the town, but don't know where to go. Rexburg's new and only mocktail bar, FizzRiz, which Katie said sound too close to jizz. It's becoming the new hotspot and has stirred up excitement in the students and residents of Rexburg. The new business opened its doors on July 4th, and the business is already booming. The drinks are ready to serve.
Wow.
The idea for a mocktail bar in Rexburg came from the dynamic duo Joseph Joe Aragon and Joseph Joe... They put Joe in quotes, too.
Oh, because he's Joseph, but he goes by Joe. I gotcha. Yeah. Okay, it's his nickname. Okay.
Why don't they just call him Joe?
Call him Joe, yeah.
Joe Aragon, just the stupid. Anyway, imagine being dumb. And Daniel Alworth, they met in their hometown in Colorado, and after a brief period of not seeing each other, conveniently re-met at the Brolin's grocery store in Rexburg. I've talked to you about Brolin's before.
Yes, you have.
They were in my family's ward. Anyway, they're nice people, and they've become kind of like a. Like, their newer stores are a little bit like Trader Joey's, Joe's-ish. Like, they're a little more...
Trader Joseph's.
Trader Joseph's, yes. He goes by Joe. He's classy. The super Trader Joe's are going to be called Trader Joseph's. Like, the bigger ones. Anyway... after catching up, Alworth arcade in town, and Aragon quickly mentioned he was looking to open a business as well. After some discussion, they partnered up and created the mocktail bar. When I first moved back here, I wanted to open a gay bar.
Mm-hmm.
And it could happen in Idaho Falls and be very pretty popular, but there's just a lot of red tape and garbage. So.
Yeah.
That lost speed very quickly because I was like, I don't want to do that. No. We got absolutely flooded the first week. It was like a war zone. Sometimes the line was out the door, and after everybody left, the cleaning took almost an hour and a half. The menu was a concoction of some of the most popular bar drinks, from pina coladas, strawberry and mango daiquiris, margaritas, mojitos, Shirley Temples, and to even the spicy Bloody Mary, all without the alcoholic component.
Which you can get those in any bar.
Yeah. Also, what happened to avoiding the appearance of evil? Seriously. Folk evil, like,
yeah. Evil, like, why? Like, why does a Mormon even want to drink a Bloody Mary? Like, you're not even supposed to want to. You're not even supposed to want to sin. It just doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't. Yeah.
Exactly. Aragorn, which sounds like Aragorn.
They're taking the hobbits to Isengard.
Aragorn and Alworth both say they've known people who struggled with alcohol in their lives, so they wanted to make a place where everything looks and feels the same, but is safe from the dangers that can come along with it.
Okay, and do we also have, like, baking soda to snort instead of cocaine? Like, really?
Well, it's also like that not coffee place that yes! we interviewed.
Oh my fucking god, I cannot with this shit. I don't know, whatever, yeah. But, like...
That guy was a douche. Anyway.
He kept, like, hitting on both of us. It was weird. That was a weird situation.
That was very uncomfortable.
I'm like, no, sir. No, sir. No, sir. No, thank you. No, thank you.
Presentation is really key to an experience because it's more than just drinking some tasty beverage. It's about having an experience and doing something you haven't done while feeling like you could be part of a culture that we don't partake in.
No, no, no. You're supposed to be a peculiar people. And we're in the world, not of the world. You're
exactly.
You're supposed to be better than that, you fucking morons. Oh, you so enraged all of a sudden. I'm sorry.
Well, this... Yeah, we wanted to give students a safe, warm place. Warm? Where they can socialize and relax. Rockford,
so.
Yeah. But They got... tales. Let's see. Both Aragorn and Alworth yearned for a good nightlife spot in Rexburg. I mean,
nightlife spot.
Right. Do my students have a curfew too? They have a curfew. Like how? I can remember coming home from work because I had a fucking job while I was like I worked at Walmart, and I'd get home after curfew and I'd get judged for it. Like,
oh,
I'm,
yeah, and you're like, I'm at work.
Like, I'm not out slutting around. Well, I mean, but...
Don't lie, you were.
A little bit. There was a little bit of that, but... So, I was... anyway. But real slutting. It wasn't soaking, or, like, whatever. let's see. They decided that not only will the mocktail bar have great food and treats, but various activities to choose from. Alworth, who originally wanted to open an arcade, added a room full of arcade games and classic bar activities such as billiards and darts. Ooh, we're so edgy. They will also have themed events coming up, such as the classic karaoke and trivia nights. They should have dragons.
For sure. For sure, yeah.
I'm sure that'll be a big hit. Another exciting addition. Addition. Who edited the... okay, anyway.
Don't even get me started.
Live music speakeasy that is still under construction. It can't be a speakeasy without alcohol. Built a lot of wonderful memories at other Rexburg restaurants and made some great friends, but it's not the atmosphere that I wanted or dreamed about. What? We want Fitzriz to be the Rexburg nightlife spot, and we want it to be a safe place. This is the roller coaster of emotions on this episode. I didn't think we'd get into this, but this is funny.
I'm so fucking enraged right now. Like, there was a wine bar we used to go to all the time, and we would go, and somebody, like, one of my friends is allergic to alcohol. She Hashimoto's, I think is what it is. You can't process alcohol. Anyways.
Yeah.
aside from the point, she would say, can I see your mocktail list? And they would have a full list of mocktails so she could still be at the bar and, like, hanging out with all of us. Like, this is not a new concept. You're not groundbreaking. This is not a big, huge thing. Like, yep.
But for Mormons, it's like, ooh. I can take pictures and, like, I'm, like, the cool kids. No,
look at my fancy, look at my fancy drink.
It's juice.
It's juice, honey.
Drinking juice.
Yeah. Like my mother who drinks her diet Coke or Pepsi or whatever out of a goblet. Same shit. When she goes to restaurants and doesn't order wine, and they go to take the wine glasses. No, I want that. And she, like, holds it.
That's like, well, I don't know if that's similar, but when the reason I smoke when I'm drunk is because I would see people smoking and I'm like, ooh, I want to be like a cool kid. You know, like, I just liked holding it. There was one night I got so drunk, but I was like, and I got a cigarette from somebody in the bathroom and I didn't never lit it the whole night. Just I just carried it all night.
It was just your support cigarette.
My emotional support cigarette. Like,
I was really drunk one time outside of a bar. And somebody handed me a cigarette. And then they were, like, looking at me and they're like, you smoke pot, don't you? And I was like, oh, yeah. I wasn't holding it properly. Oh, yeah. I was like, how could you? Oh, never mind. Here, you can have that back. I don't want it.
Opening their business hasn't come without its challenges. Both partners are new to the business owning scene, so it has come with a bit of a learning curve. Learning how to properly run their finances, purchase their ingredients, and other details has been tough, but both Aragon and Alworth are thankful to have such a helpful and patient staff at their service.
Oh my God, imagine these two boneheads.
Let's open a business.
Wait, how do you contact a vendor? What's a business license? How do we do? Where do you buy glasses? Do you just, like, go to Walmart and just, like, buy a bunch of glasses?
Oh, it kills me. Our staff are so quick at learning, so patient and willing to adapt. We can't do this without our staff and our community. Daniel and I were getting ready to finish up our time here in Rexburg, but we couldn't leave yet. There's still more to be done. I know. That makes it sound like he's, again, like he's, like, called by God to do this kind of thing.
Yeah, God really wants the Mormons in Rexburg to, like, get diabetes from their... Well, you know
what? The Spirit also prompted Laura to that she was going to
marry an apostle.
An apostle, and look what happened to her. Like, not saying that the two things are... But it's very, you know, anyway. There's a similar line of thinking there, though. Yeah. Having been helping for a short amount of time, it seems
Fizz Riz. I
realize that Riz is like, it's a trendy word that's not, it's not going to be around long. So, like, rebrand. And also people are probably going to go to that thinking that it's like one of those drink places where you can just mix the syrup
the
into
soda
the
soda things or whatever. Pop
soda pine and the... What is, there's also...
So delicious.
There's one that's called Fizz something. I think it's just called Fizz.
Maybe, so, yeah. Swig? Like, Swig's one?
Swig, yep. Oh my God. It seems Fizz Riz has already fit in well with the Rexburg social scene. Social scene?
What, family-owned evening groups?
I know. I guarantee that's what... Oh, FHE, let's go to Fizz Riz. Ooh.
Yeah, let's go have some mocktails at Fizz Riz.
You stopped with a cock. Some cock.
Well, go, I was going to say cocktails.
Mocktails. I was just like.
Mocktails. Zero cock happening. No cock.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely not the cock we would. Anyway. Let's see. So whether students are looking for a fun night out, a place to unwind and relax, or are simply curious, Fizz Riz is worth checking out. Honestly, I might go see it. Report back.
Yeah, let me know. It's like a gateway to, like, learning how to order drinks. It's training wheels for going to a bar. You go to the bar and you see, and then you find what you like, and then you can go to a real bar and be like, I know I like this, so I'll get the real one now.
Yeah. Mm. I'm surprised there's not protests about this. Like, how dare they?
Yeah. You're teaching kids how to drink alcohol.
Yeah. Anyway, that was definitely, I thought it was going to be true crimey, but we ended up just bashing on Rexburg. And
that was Fizzers, fun, yeah. So. Wow. Now, for some reason, I just want to go make a Moscow mule and sit on my deck.
There you go. I like Moscow mules. They're such a good summery drink.
I know. I love them. They're deadly. I love them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
That was fun.
Yeah. Welcome to Rexburg, where you can get mocktails, and there's also, you know,
murder, but not murder. Murder, homicide. But not murder. Sort of homicide, but negligent homicide.
Negligent homicide.
Wow. Definitely coming to visit.
You should come, and we could go to Fizzriz together.
That's why I'm gonna finally get my passport submitted. I need to go to Fizzriz. What's up? The little dude at the shack when you're crossing the border, and your reason for traveling to the States, Fizzriz.
Fizzriz. You're like, what?
Damn.
Are you okay? Not even remotely, but it's fine.
No. Not even close.
I feel like that was one of our most chaotic episodes, but, you know, it's fine.
It's fine. Chaos is fine. People are here for the chaos. If they want deeply researched, well-informed, go listen to Katie and Sarah. They're awesome. We are their unhinged little sister that just, like, needs dramatic.